Okay, the second case for oral argument this morning is Finag Inc. versus Pipestone Livestock Auction and Finag Inc. versus South Dakota Livestock Sale to Watertown. For the appellant is the appellants are Mr. Tim Shattuck, an attorney from Sioux Falls. For the appellee Finag is Mr. Jason Shanks, an attorney from Sioux Falls, and Mr. Jonathan Van Patten, an attorney from Vermilion. Mr. Shanks, I understand you'll be making the presentation this morning?
Yes.
Okay. Very well. Mr. Shattuck, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Please, the court and counsel. I'm Tim Shattuck, representing both South Dakota Livestock Sales and Pipestone Livestock Auction Market, which I will refer to today as the sale barns. Just briefly, the facts of this case are that Finag loaned about $4.5 million to Burwald Brothers, Calvin Burwald, Michael Burwald, Kimberly Burwald, and Sakota Dairy, who I will refer to collectively as the Burwalds. In conjunction with these loans, Finag and the Burwalds executed a security agreement that gave Finag collateral in certain security interest in collateral owned by the Burwalds.
Was the $4.5 million used to buy the livestock in the first place?
There's no evidence in the record as to that point, Your Honor. All we know is that the $4.5 million was loaned to the Burwalds. It's my understanding it was an ongoing entity for some time and was probably more of an operating loan, but that's not been developed in the record. In July of 2002, Finag filed its financing statement with the South Dakota Secretary of State, listing the above identified borrowers as the debtors. The financing statement did not include the name of C&M Dairy as a debtor. In mid-2004, as this court knows, the Burwalds defaulted on the loans from Finag and filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 11. Finag has now sued my two sale barns and a number of other entities for conversion, alleging that the sale barns committed conversion by selling cattle that were being sold in the name of C&M Dairy and by failing to not list Finag as a co-payee on the checks. The trial courts below granted summary judgment in favor of Finag for different reasons, and we appeal from those grants of summary judgment. The court should reverse the entry of summary judgment in favor of Finag and enter summary judgment in favor of the sale barns for four separate reasons. One, Finag's claims against the sale barns are barred by SDCL 57A-9-609.1 because Finag failed to properly offer to file a criminal complaint against the Burwalds. Second, Finag failed to prove the necessary elements of its conversion claims. Third, Finag's security interest is not enforceable against sales made in the name of C&M Dairy because Finag failed to list C&M Dairy as a debtor on its financing statement. And fourth, the sale barns took free of Finag's security interest under the Food Security Act. Section 609.1 of Article 9 of the UCC appears to be a unique statute to South Dakota. It sort of appears to be added by our legislature, and there's no related statute in any other state that I could find. And that statute provides that no cause of action for the recovery of security or its value may be convinced by a secured creditor against an innocent third party, purchaser of farm products, or against the livestock agency unless two things are met. The action is commenced within 24 months of the sale, and the action is preceded by the secured creditor offering to file a criminal complaint against the debtor.
How could Pipestone or the livestock company or the sale barns, as you say, be an innocent party when they have purchased cattle from somebody who was not the seller, but in fact are a fictitious name people who have not even filed a fictitious name certificate, which actually is a crime. It's a misdemeanor not to file a fictitious name certificate. They're buying from somebody who, you know, in essence, to go your way on that would be, we'd actually be approving a crime, wouldn't we?
Well, I don't think the sale barns committed any crime. The sale barns did not know that C&M Dairy was a fictitious name.
But don't they have an obligation to check? Since anybody could have I walked up there with those cattle from Burwell's and said, I'm the seller, and then that makes you an innocent purchaser? Can you just fabricate a name out of the sky?
I think sell cattle
and the sale barns are protected? Certainly not under the FSA.
If the sale barns do not have notice that the name is made up or a fabrication or not the true owner of the cattle, then the sale barns are not obligated to inquire any further as to who the true owner is.
Well, they're getting the cattle from Burwald, and Burwald is one of the owners, and he's also one of the debtors. And so how can they be an innocent third party?
Well, Your Honor, the record's not clear on that. FinAg argues that the Burwalds owned these cattle, but that has not been developed. There's no evidence in the record as to who actually owned the C&M Dairy cattle.
Well, plus there's no argument below about disqualification from 601.9 because they weren't innocent parties.
Right.
That's not even an issue in this case.
Well, 609.1 applies to innocent parties and sale barns and grain dealers.
Right,
so.
But nobody ever argued below that 609 didn't apply because the sale barns weren't innocent.
I mean, it's clear that FinAg believes 609.1 is applicable. The question is, did they properly comply with it by sending a letter to myself and the Burwald's bankruptcy counsel? And it's our position that they didn't, because that has no consequence. It appears that the purpose of 609.1 is to give the legal authorities notice of a potential crime and let the legal authorities do an investigation and determine if criminal proceedings ought to be brought. By sending me a letter...
It doesn't say that, does it? It just says to offer. It doesn't say offer to whom.
It doesn't say that. And it's up to this court to decide what that means, because it's left blank. But if you, as we cited the cases in our reply brief, when you interpret a statute, you have to interpret it to have some meaning and some impact. And if that statute is to have any meaning or any impact, certainly providing the complaint to myself or the offer to myself and Claire Gary is meaningless. I mean, if you want to interpret the requirement as FinAg has done in this case, then we might as well take the statute off the books and say it doesn't have any effect, because it never will.
The other side of that is, how many state's attorney's offices do you know where you could walk in and say, well, I don't want to file a complaint, but I got to make an offer. And so what's the state's attorney going to say? They're going to say, you either file a complaint or you leave. We're not going to mess around with somebody coming in and say, you know, I might offer here. So shouldn't the, I mean, who, it doesn't make sense to me that you'd go to a state's attorney and say, I'm offering to file a complaint.
I think how the statute should work is that someone in FinAg's position says, pursuant to statute, we're going to make this offer to file a criminal complaint. And then the state's attorney should say, well, what are the facts that would support a criminal complaint? And in this case, it'd be relatively clear. They could say, well, we believe the Burwalds own these cattle. They tried to avoid our security interest by selling them in a different name that was not listed on the financing statement, and that's the crime. So for our particular case, I think, Justice Sinner, it would have worked if they had made the offer and the state's attorney or whomever did their job. They would have investigated. And I mean, I'm sure there are circumstances where there may not be a crime there, but that's to be determined by the state's attorney once the facts are
set. Since the statute's unique to South Dakota, is it applicable to the transactions with Pipestone?
I believe so, Your Honor, because based on my research, if it's a procedural statute, even if you were to apply Minnesota substantive law to the proceeding related to Pipestone Livestock, you should still apply the procedural statute, which would include the statute of limitations and any requirement to proceed, any procedural requirements such as 609.1. And I think even in FinAg's brief, they characterize Section 609.1 as a procedural requirement. So yes, because it's a procedural versus substantive law or process, I agree. I think it should be applied. And FinAg hasn't ever argued that they didn't have an obligation to comply with 609.1 in the Pipestone case. The second reason is for summary judgment, in addition to the failure to comply with 609.1, is back to something Justice Sabers raised, and that is, it's not a given that the Burwells own these cattle. There's no evidence. The only way there was conversion here by Fine Egg, or excuse me, by the sale barns, was if the if Fine Egg had a security interest in the cattle. The only way Fine Egg had a security interest in the cattle is if they were owned by one of the identified debtors.
Well, we do know that Burnwalds are the debtors, and they borrowed $4.5 million from Fine Egg, and that the security agreement covered all livestock, cattle, dairy, or all livestock, dairy cattle, and milk, farm products and milk, right?
The security agreement provided that, but the effective financing statement, which is what comes into play under the Food Security Act and is in play here, only covered dairy cattle and milk. So although the security agreement signed by the parties applied to all cattle, the effective financing statement only listed the collateral as dairy cattle and milk.
You know,
and that's all they're trying to enforce or can enforce.
Those are arguments against, but I mean, what do you have positively to say that C&M Dairy ever owned these cattle?
I think the record is, A, I don't have 2 points. First, Fine Egg is the plaintiff. Fine Egg is the one that received summary judgment, so they had the burden of proof. And they had the burden of presenting some evidence as to who owned these cattle, that it was one of the debtors, and they never did that. They could have simply deposed one or both of the Burwalds, and if the Burwalds owned the cattle, established ownership that way, but they chose not to do that. And the record is silent.
There's the Burwell deposition, though.
There's a Burwell deposition taken in the bankruptcy case, of which my clients were not parties, and under our statute can't be used against us because we didn't have an obligation to or have an opportunity to appear. So I don't think that and then if you look at that deposition, it's very vague. Mr. Burwell never came out and really testified, testified as to who owned these cattle. He talked about ownership of cattle in general. It wasn't narrowed by time frame, wasn't as to any particular cattle, so there's absolutely no evidence in this record or testimony as to who owned the C&M dairy cattle. I want to make one point on that. Let's assume Fine Egg is right, that the cattle were owned by the Burwalds and that Burwalds sold them in the name of C&M Dairy. under our administrative rules, a DBA such as C&M Dairy can be listed as a debtor. And I cite the court to Administrative Rule 5:04:04:20.
Yeah, is that true, even if they've committed a misdemeanor by not filing a fictitious name certificate in South Dakota?
Well, with respect to Fine Egg, they knew that C&M Dairy, that they knew that the Burwalds were using the name C&M Dairy. And I think
not
Fine Egg,
according to the record, as I understand it, not until much later.
Oh no, the financing statement was filed in July of 2002. The litigation where Fine Egg acknowledged that C&M Dairy was a DBA of the Burwalds occurred in November 2002, before most of these sales. So they had information early on. Especially if you view the record in light most favorable.
Was that the information you're talking about that referred to them being part of a lawsuit?
Right. The lawsuit alleged, Fine Egg was the defendant in the lawsuit that alleged that the Burwalds did business as C&M Dairy.
Right. But that's not knowledge. That's not knowledge that C&M Dairy was properly selling livestock owned by Burwalds to somebody else.
It's not. Well, it's knowledge that they did business that way, and if you look at the allegations and the exhibits attached to the complaint in that matter, it did involve the sale of cattle. So once they had that knowledge, if Fine Egg would have done any adequate investigation and said, if you're not selling cattle in the name of C&M Dairy, how are you selling them? Tell us where you're selling your cattle. tell us, give us an accounting of where you've sold your cattle in the past year. FINAG would have learned and discovered that the Burwells were selling cattle in the name of C&M Dairy, if indeed that was the case.
I thought they, in fact, inquired of the Burwells, and the Burwells said they were not.
That's a disputed question of fact, but FINAG offered the affidavit of Steve Almos, who is a convicted felon, who says he talked to one of the Burwells, and the Burwells told him that they didn't use the name C&M Dairy to sell cattle. There's no evidence that Mr. Almos then asked the next question, well, how are you selling your cattle then? You haven't listed us as a joint payee on any of the checks since you've borrowed money from us. How are you selling the cattle? Moreover, according to the deposition testimony of Calvin Burwell in the bankruptcy case, he says FINAG never contacted me, or my brother, and asked how we were selling cattle. So Almos's testimony is contradicted by Mr. Burwald's, and if you take the facts in the light most favorable to the sale barns, as you must in this case on overturning the summary judgment of the Fine Egg, the facts must be ruled that there was no inquiry by Almos.
Well, but more importantly, we're only concerned with material issues of fact, and is Fine Egg's knowledge or lack of knowledge relevant to any issue other than their duty to amend their EFS if it was seriously misleading?
I think that FINAG's knowledge that the Burwells were selling cattle in the name of C&M Dairy or some other name is relevant to that point, that they should have amended the effective financing statement to include C&M Dairy. And second, it goes to the point that the sales were not authorized. The second element of conversion
okay.
is that Fine Egg has to show that we didn't authorize these sales. And it's our position that they sold over 2,000 head of cattle over a two-year period. They had to know that they were selling cattle and not listing Fine Egg as a payee on the checks, that something was going on, and they never investigated it.
Okay, the flip side now, again, on material issues of fact, tell me what the sale barn's knowledge would be material to, which issues, if there is a dispute of fact, about whether the sale barns knew or should have known.
Right.
That these are actually Burwell cattle. What issues is that material to?
Right.
Because I'm afraid this knowledge issue, if we're not careful about what it's material to, can be maybe potentially misused here.
I think that, let me do my analysis of the FSA, and that's where I think that the sale barn's knowledge as to C&M Dairy and the ownership of the cattle is relevant. Under the FSA, a sale barn takes the cattle free of any security interest created by the seller. If you adopt Fine Egg's version of the facts, the seller in this case, the owners and sellers, were the Burwells. So under the FSA, the first part of the analysis, the sale barns took the cattle free from any security interest created by the Burwells. The only way Fine Egg subjects the sale barns to the security interest of Fine Egg is if they establish one of the notice exceptions. And in this case, it's clear from the record that although the cattle may have been owned by the Burwells, they were sold in the name of C&M Dairy. And it's also undisputed in the record that the sale barns were told that the owner and seller of these cattle is C&M Dairy. There's no evidence in the record that the sale barns knew that C&M Dairy was a DBA of the Burwells, whether it was a separate entity. All they knew is that they were being told that the cattle were owned and being sold by C&M Dairy.
Who were they told by?
Whoever delivered the cattle.
Calvin Burwell.
We don't know. There's been no record developed as to who delivered these cattle.
Well, sometimes we know it's Calvin Burwell. Sometimes we know it's Michael Burwell.
We don't know that from this record, Your Honor. I don't believe there's any evidence in the record to establish who delivered the cattle.
Well, sometimes the check was delivered to Michael Burwald, wasn't it?
Checks were mailed to an address at which the Burwalds lived.
But finish the materiality
okay.
issue.
But, okay, so...
There is an issue of fact. It seems to me that it's not material under the FSA because you can have actual knowledge.
Right.
Unless you comply with the notice provisions.
In this case, the notice provision doesn't apply because the sale barns were told that the cattle were being sold by C&M Dairy and were owned by C&M Dairy. The sale barns then looked at the master list of affected financing statements for C&M Dairy. And because C&M Dairy wasn't listed, even though it could have been because it was a DBA, they didn't find the name. And therefore, they did not have notice that the cattle were owned by anyone subject to an affected financing statement.
So it's immaterial. Their actual knowledge is immaterial under the FSA, unless they complied with the notice provision of the Act.
Only if they received actual knowledge through the central filing system.
Right.
Right.
Your time has expired, Mr. Shattuck.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Shanks, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jason Shanks, and I'm here with co-counsel Jonathan Van Patten on behalf of Fine Egg, the appellee in this case. The inclusion of the created by the seller clause in the Food Security Act means that the statute does not protect a sale barn or a buyer from security interests, which they're seeking protection that were not created by the actual seller or from a fronting party. In this particular case, no matter what factual assumptions are made, the sale barns cannot sell these cattle free of Fine Egg security interests. Well, that's because if we consider the Burwalds as the seller, Fine Egg filed the proper effective financing statement and UCC filings, and therefore under the Food Security Act, they're protected and sale barns had notice. If we consider C&M Dairy to be the seller, the sale barns are still liable because they would only be protected to the extent that C&M Dairy created any security interest in these cattle, and they're not protected for the security interest created by the Burwalds.
But you know, C&M Dairy is not a real person. It's a fictitious name. It's not like the Huffnagel case where you had a real person that was fronting. This is a fictitious name case.
Well,
and it seems to me that a good argument could be made, at least under the UCC, it could be made that they were acting. They were the alter ego of Burwalds that C&M Dairy was. And therefore, they should be deemed to have created the security interest.
Well,
that's what most UCC cases, how they interpret the created by the seller provision in the UCC.
Sorry, Your Honor. I think a couple of responses. First, we would agree that it is a non-existent entity, and if it's a non-existent entity, it can't be the seller. And if it's not the seller, then the only seller in this case is the Burwalds. I think if we do try to create some type of alter ego argument, we're going to go down a road where anyone can make up any fictitious name and go into a sale barn and sell cattle, and then they get the money free and clear, and there's going to be no repercussions.
Well, they may go to prison under the statute that requires a criminal prosecution.
And that would be against the debtors. However, that doesn't protect the lenders in our security interests. And we believe that Minnesota Supreme Court's analysis in the Huffnagel case is on point, and in that this, if we are going to consider C&M Dairy as the seller, that is akin to a fronting situation. That no matter if we have ranchers using their kids' name to sell cattle or grain, or if they're using employees, or if they're coming up with a fake name and going in, it's the same process that they're trying to get around the UCC requirements and the Food Security Act and do an end around security interests of the lender.
But the FSA was designed actually to protect the sale barns in those kinds of cases. They didn't want the sale barns to have to go out and be doing due diligence on every seller. So isn't it more consistent with the purpose of the FSA to treat the created by the seller as C&M Dairy in this case?
No, I believe the purpose of the FSA was in part to prevent double payment by third-party buyers and to protect sale barns. However, we don't believe that the FSA goes to the extent that we're creating a blanket protection for sale barns or third-party buyers where they can come in and say, hey, they just gave us a name, we're not liable. It went from more of a strict liability standard to a limited liability wherein now they're only subject or only going to be liable for those or protected for those interests created by the seller. If the legislature and Congress wanted to give a blanket protection, they would have said for all interests created or for all security interests. They would have protected the buyers and the sale barns for all security interests, not limiting it simply to those interests created by the seller. In addition to the FSA, Pipestone Livestock in particular is also liable because it acted as a lender on almost all the sales that were involved in this case. We had a situation where they would sell or allow the Burwells to come in and buy cattle and not pay for them, and then weeks later when they come in and sell our collateral cattle, they would pay themselves back out of those proceeds. And that's a situation where courts have looked at and said you're not protected by the FSA, and we looked to state law, and in that particular case we have filed a UCC filing and effective financing statement, and we have priority in front of the sale barns and should have been listed on those checks. I did want to address the UCC argument that we didn't list all the cattle on our effective financing statement, that we only listed the dairy cattle and milk. To the extent that they're arguing that we need to go back down to the circuit court and make some type of determination as to, were these dairy cattle, were these beef cattle, we don't believe that's necessary under this court's decision in Farmers and Merchant State Bank versus Tevadol. This court was presented with a situation where the bank included in its description all cattle, hogs, sheep, wool, but in the effective financing statement only listed beef cattle and dairy cattle and didn't list hogs. In that particular case, this court held that the bank's financing statement provided general notice to the buyer and held that the state or the security interest was upheld in the hogs. Similar case here in our UCC filing, we had specifically all livestock, and even though we didn't list or put the code in on the EFS for beef cattle, we would submit that we've complied, and under Tevadol, we don't need to go back in front of the circuit court to determine which cattle were dairy cattle and which cattle were beef cattle. We had a secured interest in everything.
But the EFS requires more strict description of collateral than the general UCC.
Correct, Your Honor. And in the
So if you don't put the right code in, does dairy cattle cover the other cattle? I mean, none of us are cattlemen. I don't know whether these reds and mixed and other things you're running through this sale barn are dairy cattle or not.
Well, and that's another issue is that a lot of times you're going to be relying on the interpretation of the person delivering the cattle or the sale barn as, is this a mixed breed? Is this a Holstein steer mix? Is this, should we classify this as a dairy cow or shouldn't we? And that's why Fine Egg takes a secured interest in all the livestock. And in the Tevadol case...
But why can they go broader than what they filed on, which is just dairy cattle? The EFS is just dairy cattle. So for EFS or for FSA purposes, they're not protected beyond dairy cattle, are they?
According to the Tevadol case, we believe we are, Your Honor. This court stated that the omission of the code number in the EFS section did not render the bank's financing statement insufficient. And so according to that case, we believe that our listing of specifically all livestock in the UCC filing gave them notice that they should have done a further inquiry. In fact, this court concluded that Tevadol should have conducted a search more thorough than a mere EFS code search.
But the UCC filing is irrelevant. It's the EFS.
Well, I think it's relevant to the extent that they're claiming we have to go back in front of the trial court to determine, whether we're entitled to all the proceeds or just the proceeds for the sale of the dairy cattle. And I guess it's our position that we don't need to do that. We had a security interest in all the cattle, and based on the Tevadol case, there's no need to go back.
But that would only be if you get past the FSA and get your conversion claim. First, you got to get past the FSA.
Correct. We're asking this court to uphold the decisions of the circuit court, in particular, Judge Tim's decision and his analysis of the FSA that it doesn't provide protection, and also for this court to adopt the ruling in the Feinegg versus Huffnagel case out of Minnesota, and that in their interpretation of the Food Security Act.
Just as a point of fact, what percentage of the cattle sold or purchased by Pipestone were dairy cattle as opposed to generally livestock or non-dairy cattle?
Pipestone Livestock is a dairy auction barn, and I don't have the actual sales receipts in front of me, Your Honor, but I believe all, if not almost all, of the cattle that were sold through Pipestone were Holstein cows or dairy cows. It's going to vary with the other sale barns in these actions as to whether the cattle were dairy or beef. For the most part, they're dairy cattle. That's what the Burwalds do. They sell dairy cattle. They run dairy operations.
So you need that Pepidol case in order to support your position that livestock in a security agreement is sufficient, even though only dairy cattle are mentioned in the financing statement?
Yes.
So this was the deal, if I remember then, this issue about dairy cattle wasn't even an issue with Pipestone. It was only an issue on South Dakota Livestock.
I don't believe it was raised.
Okay.
And again, I'm not sure that it was raised in the South Dakota Livestock. It may have been raised peripherally, but it wasn't a main issue that was addressed by the court, I guess, or that the court felt it needed to distinguish between beef or dairy cattle. In regard to proving conversion in this case, we do believe there are facts in the record that support the conversion claim and that the cattle were owned by the Burwald. First, we start with the fact that we did loan the Burwalds $4.5 million. By and large, that was to purchase cattle. Now, we're getting outside the record here, but to answer Your Honor's question, it was to purchase Sakota Dairy, which is...
I don't think you can go outside the record.
Okay, Your Honor. On the record, we have the affidavit of Bob Goetz, who indicated on, and I believe it's page 90 of the Pipestone Livestock Record and page 224 of the South Dakota Livestock Record, that confirmed that Feinegg took a secured interest in all the livestock sold through the sale barns. He goes on to indicate in his affidavit that they did not waive their interest to these cattle.
He said all livestock. Say that again.
Took a secured interest in all of the livestock, or had a secured interest in all the livestock sold through the sale barns.
And who said that?
Bob Goetz, in a page 90, I believe, in the Pipestone Livestock Record, and 224 in the South Dakota Livestock. In addition to that, we have the Jerry Durr affidavit.
Did that relate to both cases, or did that relate to both Pipestone and livestock?
That related to both cases. Well, they're separate affidavits in each case, but they basically mirror each other, Your Honor. In addition to Mr. Goetz's affidavit, we have the affidavit of Jerry Durr, who was an investigator that Feinegg hired, and he spoke with Ms. Lewis, who was the operations manager at Pipestone Livestock, and asked her, who is C&M Dairy? She acknowledged that C&M Dairy was Cal Burwald. She also acknowledged that Cal Burwald delivered cattle to Pipestone Livestock. In Jerry Durr's affidavit, he goes on to indicate that Lewis advised him that Calvin Burwald sold cattle and instructed them on how to put the money on the account on one particular sale, and that he would be coming back later to make to sell cattle, and that he could apply that money to, that he sold cattle and that he would come back later to buy, and that he would use that money to buy. Ms. Lewis confirmed that in her own affidavit on page 76 of the Pipestone Livestock record, which indicates that Calvin Burwald had control over these proceeds. He was the one delivering these cattle. If you look at each and every one of these proceeds checks that was sent out by Pipestone Livestock and South Dakota Livestock, every one of those checks was signed either by Calvin Burwald or Michael Burwald. And we believe, it, and also those checks were all mailed to Calvin Burwald's address, Rural Route 1, Box 30, which is the same address that we had listed in the UCC filings. We believe taking that together is enough for the court to conclude that the Burwalds owned the cattle, that they were going in and selling these cattle under this fictitious name in order to get this money free and clear, Finag security interest. Now, if you want to consider, in addition to that, Calvin Burwald's deposition testimony, I know Mr. Shattuck objects to that. However, it seems to me that he's using it in some circumstances when it benefits him and in others when it doesn't. But if we do look at that, he makes a statement that the cattle are all owned by the Burwald Partnership. And I think that further clarifies our position that that's what was happening here. There's no evidence or testimony in the record that would indicate otherwise. All they have is they came and they gave us this name of C&M Dairy. And there has to be a genuine issue of material fact. They can't just argue. Argument does not create issues of material fact. They have to have something to point to that says, here's where the facts collide. And we just don't have that in this case. In addition, I agree with Your Honor that knowledge by the sale barns is irrelevant. Whether they were acting in good faith or care or they had lack of knowledge is not a defense to conversion. In the lower courts, there was a concern as well, what are these sale barns supposed to do? There's a number of things that they could and should be doing, taking the name of the seller, which they did, and that appears to be all they did, getting the address, getting the Social Security number or the tax ID number of the seller, asking whether there's a secured interest in these cattle that are being sold. But even if we make a checklist and go all down through all these things that they should be doing, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be fully protected under the FSA. If they want to get fully protected, then I think the language of the FSA is going to have to change from created by the seller to protecting all secured interests.
But you agree their knowledge is irrelevant unless the requirements, the specific EFS requirements are satisfied.
Yes, I believe that right in the EFS it says even if they're aware of the secured interest, right. it comes down to notice and whether FINAG has properly filed and complied with the UCC or the EFS filing requirements.
Let me switch you to conversion real quickly. On your damage claim, you know, I understand that there's perils in coming out of a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And until you get your money, you haven't got your money. But, you know, what's going to happen here if you go through Chapter 11, you get your money, and yet you're allowed to proceed and collect the same money from the sale barns on your conversion claim?
That's not the way it's going to go down, I guess, Your Honor. What we have pursued two other sale barns that are outside the ones that have been appealed to this court, Masson Livestock and Mitchell Livestock. We recovered some settlements in those cases. That money is directly applied to pay down the loan debt. To the extent that we recover in these actions, that money is used to pay down the loan debt. The problem is that we can't just sit around and wait to find out whether the Burwalds are going to pay because 609.1 says we've only got 2 years.
Well, but if you pay down the debt through the conversion action, then you're going to continue to get your Chapter 11 payments. And pretty soon you're going to be getting more money than you loan plus interest and fees.
Once we get paid in full, Your Honor, then our debt is extinguished and we would no longer receive payments.
And then Burwalds get to keep the money and the sale barns are out.
Well, the sale barns aren't necessarily out, Your Honor. I think they would have a valid claim to submit in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, claiming any money that they paid to us. They could go in and assert that claim of the bankruptcy and attempt to recover that money that should be non-dischargeable based on any fraud or misrepresentation claim that they would have against the Burwells as a result of these sales. And I think that all ties into our response to their failure to mitigate argument, that we did everything that we could reasonably be expected to do after we found out that these guys were selling our cattle under this fake name. We did file a lawsuit against them. We basically forced them into bankruptcy. While we're in bankruptcy, although we did accept the plan, it was going to be accepted and crammed down on us no matter what we did, because they had enough support from the other unsecureds in the bankruptcy. And so what we did in that regard is, you know, we did as much as we could to protect our interests in the collateral and the increased supervision of the Burwells, and required them to have computer programs and those types of things. But I think as far as, you know, this argument that we're waiving our right to collect or that we're making an election of remedies because we accept the bankruptcy plan, there has been no case law proffered by the sale barns that supports that conclusion. And we would submit that we did everything reasonably required, that we would ask this court to uphold the circuit court's decision and to reverse on the one sale in Pipestone. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shanks. Shattuck, you have 10 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor. One thing I want to point out is Mr. Shanks never addressed this morning how Fine Ag allowed cattle to be sold for 2 years without the Burwells protecting their security interest, and that 2,000 head of cattle were sold when they knew the Burwells were selling cattle, but they never did nothing about it, which goes directly to the conversion claim. Fine Ag has to prove that these sales were unauthorized to establish conversion. And we know that they allowed these sales to take place. We know that Fine Ag had to know that a dairy operation was calling cows, had to be selling bull calves or steers in some manner, and they did nothing about it. They only became concerned after 2 years when the Burwells defaulted on the loan. And there's been no explanation as to how Fine Ag can overcome or has presented any evidence that these sales were not authorized. The court asked us to be prepared to talk about Huffnagel, and I'd like to briefly draw three distinctions between the Fine Ag versus Huffnagel decision decided by the Minnesota Supreme Court in this case. As Justice Zinner pointed out, in Huffnagel you had a case where you had an owner who then sold the cattle through a third party or parties. In this case, it appears that the facts are the Burwells and C&M Dairy are one and the same, only C&M Dairy is a DBA of the Burwells.
Who says they're one and the same?
Fine Ag does. Fine Ag claims in this case...
They're non-existent.
Fine Ag claims in this case that C&M Dairy was a... Well, they had to be a DBA. That's what Fine Ag claims. Fine Ag claims that the owner of the cattle were the Burwells. We know they were sold in the name of C&M Dairy. So if Fine Ag is right, the cattle were owned by the Burwells. The Burwells sold them in the name of C&M Dairy. So they had to be a DBA. If you accept Fine Ag's allegations, it's true. I don't know. The record doesn't have any facts as to what C&M Dairy is. But that's their claim. The second distinguishing factor is, in that case, in Huffnagel, there's no evidence that the creditor knew or should have been aware that the Bucks were selling corn in the name of some other individuals or entities. And third, in Huffnagel, the court found that the purchaser of the corn had notice of the Bucks' security interest. In this case, the evidence is the sale barns did not have notice that these particular cattle being sold in the name of C&M Dairy were subject to Fine Ag security interest, because whoever was selling them or owned them used the name C&M Dairy.
Why did they send the checks to Calvin and Michael Burwald then?
That's the address of C&M Dairy. That's the address that was given. Let's assume that C&M Dairy is a separate partner.
That's the name and the address that's on the financing statement.
Let's assume that C&M Dairy is a separate partnership. of Calvin and Michael Burwald that owned these cattle. What address would they use? They'd use the same address. Let's assume that C&M Dairy is owned by Arlen Burwald, the Burwald's father. What address would they use? One of the Burwalds, I think it was Kelvin, lived with his father on the same farm. So the fact that it was the same address only means that C&M Dairy and the Burwalds had some relation. It doesn't establish ownership. When you can have a father and a son and two brothers, you can have a father, two brothers, and separate entities, and they're all going to use the same address of the farm. But that doesn't establish who owns any particular cattle being sold. And in some cases, I think that they couldn't tell you. They're just selling them and the money goes into the operation. With respect to damages, I want to point out that if you look at the Security State Bank versus Benning case, this court recognized that a lender suing on a security interest for conversion is not automatically entitled to the sale proceeds from the farm products being sold. Instead, in that case, this court endorsed the fact that the trial court held a jury trial on damages, even though liability had been established as a matter of law, and required the lender to prove up its damages that were attributable to the purchaser's wrongful conduct or conversion. In that case, the jury determined that there were no damages. In this case, or also in that case, the court recognized that a lender, such as Fine Ag, has an obligation to mitigate its damages, has an obligation to avoid any damages under the rule of avoidable consequences. And that's questions that the trial courts never resolved in this case. The trial courts just assumed damages, which they should not have done in granting summary judgment against the sale barns. They should have required Fine Ag to prove its damages. And second, as Judge Zinner was discussing with Mr. Shanks, as we sit here today, Fine Ag has not been damaged. They're continuing to receive their payments, and as far as we know, it would be pure speculation to assume that they will not receive 100% of their loans through the bankruptcy plan.
You know, the other side of that is, though, there's a 24-month statute of limitations here.
And what
are they to do? They've already lost, I think it was 9 sales under the statute, and they've got to start their conversion claim, because if the bankruptcy goes south and they don't finish the Chapter 11 plan, then they're going to be out on a conversion claim because the statute ran.
One thing that we could have done that maybe could still be done depending on the result of this case is that they start their claim, they start their causes of action, and the proceedings are stayed until the bankruptcy plan time runs out, which I believe is a 5-year plan, and they're 3.5 years in it. So they could have started their claim, and the proceedings could still be stayed. That's one option. They could have approached us about whether we'd agree not to enforce the statute of limitations, which I probably would have recommended that not happen. But that's the one answer I think that they could have done, is they could have we could have agreed that the proceedings be stayed. But they don't have any. That's a risk you got to take. When you have a short statute of limitations, you may not have any damage at that time. And they still haven't been damaged. And if you carry out what Mr. Shank says, any money they recover in these actions and the related actions is going to be credited back to the Burwald's account. The Burwalds are the ones that win. If the banks recover, if Fine Ag recovers $1 million in this case through all of these actions, the Burwalds will be paid twice for the cattle. So they'll receive a windfall of $1 million. That can't be the result. The Burwalds are the most guilty party in all of this transaction. If Fine Ag wins, they get an extra $1 million. And that will be the resolution of the case. Turning back to the, let me address the question about beef versus dairy cattle. The beef cattle issue was only raised in the Watertown case, South Dakota Livestock. I will concede that all of the cattle sold at Pipestone Livestock were dairy cattle. And unfortunately, I do have experience with cattle, and I grew up on a dairy farm, and we also have stock cattle, and I know that a Charolais, as described in some of the receipts at South Dakota Livestock, is not a dairy cattle. No one's going to be milking a Charolais. It appears that the herd at the Burwald's herd was purely Holsteins. And there are a number of cattle that, as the court has noted, were white-faced, crossbred, Charolais. And that would be a question for the courts to set out, or for Judge Tim to sort out below, as to we need to go through each and every one of the receipts, have the Burwalds and whoever else who's competent to testify identify, okay, if this is a Charolais, was that a dairy cattle or not? And I think Mr. Shanks conceded it, but he didn't want to. The FSA, the still barns are protected by the Food Security Act unless the fine ag shows that we had noticed through the central filing system that the cattle were subject to an effective financing statement. And the only cattle subject to an effective financing statement are dairy cattle. So that is relevant. They can't go back and say, well, we have a UCC filing statement that includes all cattle, because that's not pertinent under the FSA. The only thing that's pertinent is the EF, is the effective financing statement.
But by analogy, the UCC broadly interprets descriptions in financing statements. Should that not be the case here?
No, I think if you read the Act, the FSA says that they have to have noticed that these particular cattle, the FSA contains detailed requirements as to what must be in the effective financing statement, including the description and the codes. So I don't think that UCC law applies.
Are there different codes for dairy and beef cattle?
Yes. There's a specific code for, I don't know what the other description is, it's beef cattle, stock cattle, but there is a specific code for dairy cattle that they used in this case. I see I'm running out of time. I would ask the court to reverse the summary judgment, judgments entered in favor of Fine Ag, and enter summary judgment in favor of the sale barns. Alternatively, I would ask the court to find that there are material issues of fact that need to be resolved further by the trial courts and remand for further factual proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shattuck. The court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.